Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast, World Cup Daily Edition from Russia. I'm Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent, and today we'll be talking about England versus Panama, a 6-1 victory that doesn't quite put England in charge of Group G. In fact, it makes the whole picture very murky, but more on that later on. We'll also be discussing Group H's games. We saw those today, the final set of games for the second round of group fixtures. And we'll also be discussing Germany in a little bit more detail. We've got Mark Critchley on the phone, who was in Sochi at that game, but couldn't speak to us yesterday because he was just too damn busy with all the wild rewriting that was going on at the end of that game. And then I guess we'll look ahead to the final round of group games, won't we, Miguel Delaney, who sat alongside me?
Oh, we will indeed, yeah.
So, you know, a fun, jam-packed show for your Monday morning ride to work, I'm going to assume. If you're not at work today, great, good on you. But first, given that they were actually at the game and they were so excited to talk to all of you listeners today, I'll send it down to Nizhny Novgorod, where Jack Pitbrook is with Jonathan Liu at the, what's it called, the stadium down there? Just Nizhny Novgorod Stadium?
Yes, that's it.
Nizhny Novgorod Stadium. And once they've given us their view, and, you know, I'm sure some tangents and ramblings as well, we'll come back and we'll deal with that, just about everything else.
Hi, Ed. It's Jack. We're here just outside the stadium in Nizhny Novgorod. It's almost 9 p.m. and we've just finished seeing a game which I think I didn't expect at all, which was England beating Panama 6-1 with 5 goals in the first half. I think, like a lot of people, but I certainly felt victim to this. I spent the last few days writing earnest build-up pieces about how we had to respect the Panamanians and how, you know, it was going to be a difficult, long game and they would be very well organised and disciplined and we had to be patient and pick them apart. As it happened, they were complete shit, so much worse than I was expecting, and it was kind of slightly disgracefully easy. And Johnny, what did you think?
Oh, well, I think it's a quite an English trait. Hello, everybody, by the way. It's a distinctly English trait to go, well, we won 6-1, therefore they must be terrible. I mean, they were terrible, but England made them look terrible. England kind of smashed them open like a piñata. They were, you know, the first 10 minutes, as Southgate admitted, England were just kind of probing, you know, looking for the gaps. Panama playing six at the back. They came forward in the second half and actually had some chances, which I guess we probably want to talk about that aspect of it later, because England did get opened up quite a few times in the second half. But, I mean, the set-piece goals were clearly the result of some like meticulous like drilling and practice, and that was very impressive. I thought the move for Lingard's goal could have certainly hinted at the fact that they've got that in their locker as well. You know, they're not just a set-piece team. So even though Panama were limited opposition, they kept Belgium out for half a game, and England made them look like Sunday league sissies.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth emphasising how at odds this was with what we've seen in the competition so far. Like, we were at Brazil-Costa Rica, where Brazil took 91 minutes to score. Like, that's one of the reasons why people were so surprised with the Russia games. Like, it's very difficult, I think, at this level to have this kind of win where you keep on scoring. Like the issue of open play versus set play is quite an interesting one. There is a view going around in that I've been texted by two members of my family that England were bad because they didn't create any chances or score goals from open play.
Apart from the two goals they scored from open play.
Yeah, but like, it was always going to be a game dominated by set pieces. Like, international football is like that, and especially against a team as dirty as Panama, who stop you getting into any rhythm in open play, obviously you're going to be more reliant on set pieces. And it's also worth emphasising, England's set pieces are brilliant.
So good.
Like, the delivery's good. There was a really clever move, like Stones' goal. Like that was cool, but I kind of wish it had been scored by Sterling. But yeah, that was a great move. We could have scored more from set plays in the first game against Tunisia. So I think this is something clearly that Southgate's worked very hard on.
The rap against England for the last sort of 6 to 12 months, and you saw it through the friendlies against Brazil and Italy and Holland, was that they had really good spells of play. They put together really good performances, but didn't convert it into goals. Here they converted it into goals. I don't really know what more you can ask of an England side than smashing them 6-1. It was consummate. Believe people.
Yeah, I mean, you will all be familiar with the records by now, but it was certainly unlike any England tournament game I can remember.
And this England team are unlike any England tournament team I think we've seen. Even the Euro 2040, which was so much more stocked with talent, still had this kind of, you know, they had an essential frailty to them that Portugal and France in that tournament and Croatia at times kind of exploited. They're taking us to new places, this lot.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I think that there's no way that the 2006, 2010 or 2014 World Cup teams would have won a game like that, because they just didn't move the ball quick enough. They weren't aggressive enough. They weren't confident enough. That isn't a hypothesis either. That's proven. Like, we have evidence for that, because those games literally happened.
They went on getting bad results, getting bad results, getting bad results. I mean, to temper that, before this turns into like England fan TV, we should probably talk about that second half, I guess. And there were a couple of big chances, including the Panama goal that came from defensive set pieces, which is really gonna annoy Gareth Southgate. I mean, did we see in that second half maybe where England's opponents, next few opponents, hopefully might be able to get at them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that like that always happens in games like that. Like, you know, it was England were always going to take the foot off the gas a bit in the second half, particularly given they made changes. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I'd probably worry more about the first 10 minutes when actually England looked vulnerable once or twice trying to play the ball out from the back. I do think like if there is a weakness in this England team, it's the back three. Like they struggled at times in the first game as well. Given it's interesting because like under other circumstances you'd say, well, Belgium are going to cause us serious problems on Thursday, but it now sounds as if Belgium are not going to take Thursday fully seriously because they want to come second in the group so they can stay in Moscow, not have to fly down to Rostov, have an easier time of it in the quarterfinals should they get there. So it might be that we're playing up against Marouane Fellaini, Emil Mpenza, Mark Wilmots, and so it will actually be an easier game for us. And that means that, I mean, it's possible with this England team, we won't really know, they won't really get tested until quite deep into the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Belgium still, I mean, even a second string Belgium will definitely have the players to test England. And even looking further beyond, the Colombia against Poland game is going on at the moment. But basically all four teams in that group, Japan and Senegal, as well as Colombia and Poland, they have the pace on the break. They have the kind of the quick, like, attacking midfielders and wide players that can really expose a three-man defence on the transition if they're not really paying attention. So that I suppose is the slight note of caution.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not really what I'm trying to think what else there is to say about this. It was weird. It's one of those games where it was so, if the first game was a game where like there was, I think, quite a lot of debate afterwards about how well England played, what it meant. I mean, there's a massive range of opinions in the different match reports. I think this game, like, there's going to be so much more unanimity. Like, it was such a kind of one story, one theme game.
It was totally categorical. And I guess for over the next few days, we're going to see a slightly revisionist view of things, which says, well, Panama were terrible, and they're one of the, and they are one of, like, probably the worst team England have faced at a major tournament in a while. The Panama were terrible, and that they are still going to get, you know, going to get found out. And there might even be a bit of truth to that, but hell, they've been 6-1.
Another intriguing subplot from this game is how bad must the USA national team have been to have not been able to qualify behind these guys? Like, they were terrible. And like, USA finished significantly below them in their hexagonal series, which determines qualification from CONCACAF. I mean, I know, so a few of us were taking the piss on Twitter about this, and it was someone told me that under CONCACAF referees basically let Panama players get away with all the diving and fouling they want, and that means it's not going to be like it was out there today. But still, like,
I mean, I don't think we can discount the possibility that they are an okay side who just played really badly. And I think between about 20 and 40 minutes that was definitely true. And the other thing is that all the grappling and the pushing and the slightly sneaky fouls and sometimes are not so sneaky fouls that they were coming up with. England were making the referee were getting in the referee's ear about that, which I thought was quite intelligent. I mean, it was almost sort of a rugby mentality there, making sure the referee sees everything and is basically poised with the whistle, and because then they're watching out for that kind of stuff. That showed a game management that, again, England teams of the past haven't always had.
Yeah, that's true. We should also be clear. Three of the Panama back four playing in the MLS. So read into that what you will.
Not to sort of rehash an old topic, but the fact that Italy aren't at this World Cup, and we know Italy are terrible as well, but the fact that Italy aren't at this World Cup and Panama are just doesn't quite feel right.
Do you think when you watch games like this that the World Cup should be like World Cup places should be based more on merit, as in more from Europe and less from countries that aren't Europe?
Well, I think they should be based. They should be based a little more on merit. I think back in sort of 98, when the competition got expanded to 32 teams, there was a kind of a noble aim to that, which I think still holds true, that it shouldn't just be about, it's not just about getting the 32 best teams. It's about also representing the world of football and all its different styles and cultures. There's a balance to be struck between that and keeping it competitive. Now, what's happened in the last generation is that we've seen the European nations streak so far ahead, with the exception of 2002, which people, which looks a little bit of an illusion, that the European nations are actually so far ahead of their counterparts in Africa or North America or Asia or even South America. The European nations mid-tier European nations have looked stronger than pretty good, countries from other confederations, and that's a long-term trend that football, I think, has to address.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's yet another. It's funny, people have this image of international football, which is that club football has been destroyed by capitalism, but at least international football is like noble and pure and untouched. Whereas in reality, at least on the pitch, if not off the pitch, whereas in reality, I think international, the levels of international teams are increasingly determined by the wealth of those countries in terms of their ability to churn out players. That's why Iceland can now draw with Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, Panama's got a population of 4 million, and which is about, I think, 10 or 11 times what Iceland have, and But even so, the facilities that they've got, the manager was talking about it afterwards, the facilities that they've got, the standard of the domestic league, players still get paid by cheque from a little window at the end of every week. And, your average wage is something like £200 or £300. It's about the same as what, a builder or a labourer would get. I mean, the infrastructure in countries that aren't rich and aren't European is still not giving those countries the best chance of success, and again that's an issue for the game as a whole.
Well, I guess another question is: do we think the World Cup will be? This is where I think I struggle a bit. Would the World Cup be better off if countries like Panama or maybe Saudi Arabia, although that's probably less good example, were replaced by generic European countries who didn't quite make it, like Czech Republic or Slovenia or Norway or the Republic of Ireland? Would it be better or not? It could be better football, but
the football would be better. I think the football would be less diverse, which is an issue. But I think if we can sneer about countries like Serbia and Switzerland and Slovenia and other countries beginning with S that don't necessarily bring a huge amount to the party, but every country has brings it its own flavour, its own pride. I mean, the kind of the hopes and dreams of a nation, to borrow a hopelessly Hallmarky phrase. But expanding the competition to 48 teams without addressing that lack of quality is only going to make the World Cup worse.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably it from us here. listeners who are still listening, the correct answer to yesterday's trivia quiz was Graham Souness. Graham Souness was the Newcastle manager who lost his job days after his Newcastle team were beaten 3-0 by Man City, inspired by occasional Russian TV pundit Albert Riera.
Who we later realised doesn't actually speak Russian. He gets when we were watching the TV with the sound off, and apparently they dub Russian onto his face afterwards.
Well, I mean, if they can do that for him, they can do that for anyone.
Yeah, there's plenty of England players who could probably use some of that.
And with that, we'll leave you, and we will see you again tomorrow evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Johnny. We've heard what they make of it. I think Jack's term for Panama was agricultural. Johnny saying, you know, don't lose sight of the fact that England made them look bad, and it was everything.
Without wishing to take anything away from England, which is a separate argument, and obviously everything is very positive around at the moment, Panama are dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, they aren't necessarily a good team. But, you know, England have gone out to bad teams before and had bad results against bad teams before. So I think everyone knows that they're going to come up against better teams. What I've been saying since the start of the tournament is I think it's good that Gareth Southgate found a system where they can play like this and completely dominate bad teams, very bad teams in some cases. But one little tweak, I think, you know, he just rotates the midfield slightly. Maybe someone like Loftus-Cheek comes out and you bring in Dyer to play alongside Henderson. And then suddenly you've got a nice counter-attacking team where you've got speed going forward, you've got width with Trippier and Young. You've got still a solid defence in the back three. Although, I mean, they did give up some chances, especially early on, to Panama. There are also people who point out that England had one shot on target from within the box all game, and that was Harry Kane's effort where it hit his heels. But I think you're just trying to take some of that's a slightly contrarian take, yeah. I believe, because fundamentally England would have had more shots on target if they hadn't been wrestled to the ground, yeah. Given away two penalties. You know, you get those penalties because goal scoring opportunities were denied.
Also, when a game becomes that easy for you, it changes the pattern of it. I mean, just the game was won within 5 minutes.
So if they wanted more shots, they could have had more shots.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's no point in taking stupid shots. And I was watching Rio Ferdinand's analysis because basically on the Russian television, there's no real analysis of anything. And it's, you know, it's just not how we're used to watching football, I guess. And Rio Ferdinand tweeted out a little clip of something he'd said on the BBC, so I watched it, and I thought you know, his thing was interesting, that it's how unbelievably patient England are in possession, and the fact that they obviously just trust the way they've been coached, and they just stick to it, and they stick to it, and they stick to it. And we've seen in this tournament with Argentina in particular that, you know, when things go wrong, sometimes players can not follow instructions, sometimes they can follow them too much and not improvise. You know, there's always grey areas, and coaches don't want to beat all the creativity and impulsiveness out of good footballers, but they do sometimes stop typing. They do sometimes want to, you know, have players play their way, and I think Southgate's team do play a very relaxed, calm sort of football, and I guess when you go that many goals ahead that early, it's much, much easier to be relaxed and to play that calm possession game. But we'll see against Belgium. I mean, there are still all the permutations, which, I mean, I'm not even going to bother explaining them all, but it might be better for England to finish second than above that.
Yeah, especially given that... Well, actually, the one danger is, possibly for both, really, Germany could finish second. In fact, it looks like likely Germany will finish second even though they win their last game, just because of the way that's panned out, and Mexico go... We'll probably get at least 7 points, securing first spot in that group. But then you would want to, Brazil could also finish second, which would put them back over on the other side. So it could be dangerous for both Belgium and England, regardless of where they finish. But I know it feels likeliest that last 16 game will be Brazil Germany, which means whoever finishes second in the group, the path to the semi final could likely involve, say, Colombia, Japan, or Colombia, Senegal, because that's the place you play off that game. And on the other side then, Mexico, Switzerland.
Yes. So, I mean, I wish we had Critch here, who is the permutations guy, really.
But we have gotten on the phone from Sochi, where he was at the incredible Germany game last night. As I say, he didn't have time to talk to us because he was so scrambled by that late Toni Kroos free kick, which we discussed last night. And here he is to talk to us a little bit about Germany, but also the permutations in Group F, which is even more complicated, would you believe, than England's group.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, Critch. We didn't talk to you last night, but we do get to talk to you tonight. So tell us a little bit about that wild Germany-Sweden game then.
Hi, Ed. Yeah, I haven't listened to your 4 a.m. analysis of the game last night just yet, but I imagine it was about as coherent as mine was at the time. It was really difficult to formulate any thoughts on the game, to be honest, because it just had everything. A surprise lead, a fight back, contentious refereeing, a red card, and the latest of late winners. I suppose on the first half display alone, you would have to say that much of it for Germany was like the Mexico defeat. There was gaps in defence, space left in behind, and you would think that a team with more speed and pace than Sweden would have exploited that better. Having said that, Sweden still exploited it. They still had their moments too, and despite how limited they are. So I suppose that despite the win, there will still be cause for concern there.
I mean, as bad as Germany were against Mexico and they go behind against Sweden, you have to give them credit because in the end, they do turn it around.
Yeah, they do turn it around. I think you have to give credit to Lowe for his substitutions, which maybe didn't necessarily change the game, but they at least maintained the momentum after Royce's equaliser just after half-time. And, you know, though there was never any sense of inevitability about the result, you know, you always hear in the end, Germany always winning that. Like, Germany just gave themselves the best possible chance of victory, pressing high, pinning Sweden back even when they went down to 10 men. I suppose a draw was as good as a defeat for them at that stage, but it still required a level of bravery that they deserve credit for, because another Swedish goal would have just destroyed them at that point.
And I think we have to talk about the free kick, just because the free kick was almost like a defining World Cup moment, like one of the best moments of this tournament so far. That the way he hits it, the intelligence to roll it to the side and have the player stop it, the accuracy to hit it exactly in that corridor he does with that sort of swaz and pace, and you know the way that he put it perfectly in the corridor of uncertainty where someone might have got a touch onto it and put it in, but it's going to go in anyway. What can you say about it?
Yeah, what can you say? At the time, myself, I was confidently finishing off my match report, not considering he would shoot, and even if I guessed that he might, he'd had such a poor night up to that point that I might have bet against him, to be honest. He was woeful in the first half. I don't think many people disagree with that. He was at fault for the Sweden goal. And altogether, he was just not having an enjoyable tournament to that point. But, and I think it's easy to understate this, he is class. He's a player at that elite level capable of these kind of divine moments. And the free kick is one of them. There's some talk over whether it's a turning point, a watershed moment. I don't know about that. If they play Brazil in the round of 16, and if Brazil are in any sort of form, intent perhaps on avenging the 7-1 from 4 years ago, I think I probably still back Brazil in that fight. And, well, I don't know. This was up to this point last night, this was still a squad underperforming. and capable of so much more. And we've seen moments like that Cruz free kick galvanise teams before this, much worse teams than Germany are. So I suppose there's no real reason it can't happen with them either. There's no real reason this can't be a moment that really kicks on and the tournament starts from here.
And with all this going on, Germany are alive still. You're our permutations man, so try and explain Group F to us, because the top of Group G situation is very tight between England and Belgium, but Group F is one of the most complex situations where kind of everyone seems to have a chance of finishing anywhere from kind of top to bottom.
Yeah, it's a mess, to be honest. Okay, so let's try and get it clear. Mexico only need a point, then they're through. Sweden are through if they win or if they better Germany's result. Germany need to win by two or more or better Sweden's result. And South Korea, amazingly, are still not out of this tournament yet, but they need to beat Germany and hope Sweden lose. So, I mean, there are also possibilities of a three-way tie for first and second, or perhaps a two-way tie for second. And in those cases, I think even some of FIFA's own rules on this stuff aren't even clear. So, I think what we can say is we now expect Germany to beat South Korea after the other night, whereas Sweden and Mexico is a much tighter call. On the evidence of yesterday, I think Mexico go through as winners with Germany behind them. But I would still say don't quite yet write this limited and uncomplicated but sometimes very brutally effective Sweden side off just yet.
Good stuff as ever from Critch down there. He's going to stay down an extra couple of days for the conclusion of Group C, which is Australia, Peru. Australia do have a chance of qualification if they win that final group game against Peru. I guess we should address, before we go on to kind of looking ahead to this final week of games in the groups, we should talk about, have you got anything you want to say on England first? Anything more you'd like to say on England that hasn't already been said?
It's very difficult to get a read on England because of the nature of their first two games. Tunisia are much better than Panama, but they did kind of suffer a stage fright in that first game. But on the whole, even despite that, I think everything is quite positive. And just the nature of this competition means England should certainly not be fearful of anyone they really face, to be honest. I think this is worth a go for them.
Harry Kane is in the box seat now for the Golden Boot. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo has had a good start as well, but Kane's got a hat-trick to add to his first two goals, and five goals is usually pretty much enough to put you in contention for the Golden Boot full stop, and he's got it in the first two games.
He's already got the same amount of goals that the top scorers in 2006 and 2010 got, and is one off the top goal scorer for seven of the last 10 tournaments, which was always six.
He's not going to reach the record, you'd say, which is what Jules Fontaine scored 13 goals in one tournament. Very unlikely in a different era. Who did he rack most of those up against? They must have had one game against someone utterly dreadful.
To be fair, I think it was one of a very complete. I've got my computer right in front of me. We can check.
You find out who Jules Fontaine scored most of his goals against.
Well, I think there's quite an even spread. To be fair, right through the I'm almost certain. I think he scored in every match, bar the final, obviously, because France didn't make it. They were knocked out by Brazil. Here we go, Fontaine. Players and coaches, Just Fontaine, the big man. I believe he's at Stade Rennes, who of course qualified for two European Cup finals.
This is really bad audio. We're on an audio medium basically I'm waiting for you to...
This way. Okay.
So here we go. So, yeah. The big scoring games, a 7-3 win over Paraguay, a 3-2, a 2-1, a 6-3.
He's got three against Paraguay, 7-3. He's got two against France and against Yugoslavia and a 3-2 defeat. Oh, 2-1 win over Scotland here. And it's that man Fontaine again with the goal that seals it. One there. 4-0 against Northern Ireland in the quarterfinals. Fontaine with one again. No, two, sorry, two. So yeah, he scores in every game he plays in. Then one in the 5-2 defeat in the semi against Brazil. Now, I suppose of his 13 goals, four of them come against West Germany in the third and fourth place playoff. So that's...
Get out of my face. 1958 World Cup. Absolute scum. So that's nine. Nine. Nine's still good. Nine's a good total. But nine's an achievable total for Kane this time. To bring it back to something that people might actually care about. How do we feel about Group H? So it's a very open group with Colombia, who were the favourites, you'd say, at the start of the tournament to win this group. They're now back in the mix. They beat Poland in the late kickoff. Poland have been really disappointing, to be honest. And they're mathematically out. Poland are definitely out. Colombia with an impressive win today, 3-0 over them. Japan Senegal was a great game earlier on as well. Japan might be the team that surprised me the most in terms of like Mexico, I knew were capable of a shock. I guess you didn't expect them to do it against Germany, but Japan I really thought might be the whipping boys of this group, and they played some great stuff. I know they're packed with playmakers and nice passing players, but you know that doesn't always work out. It's not necessarily a balanced way to have a team, but they have found a nice way to play good football. I think their coach yesterday was asked how he deal with Senegal's physicality and all that sort of stuff. He said, well, I can't ask my players to grow 6 inches, I can't ask them to be faster, so we're just going to have to play better football than them. And they've played better football, I think, than both teams have come up against so far, albeit Colombia disadvantaged for 85 minutes by Carlos Sanchez's red card. So,
who do you think has gone true? Colombia or Senegal? I mean, Japan, I think, will do enough. Especially Poland could be, you know, given how the tournament's gone.
Yeah, so Japan-Poland is a great chance for Japan to go through. I'd be interested to see how many times have Japan got through the group stage, because they seem to qualify most...
2002, 2010...
They seem to qualify a lot for the tournament, but they're a bit like Mexico. That they never go deep. Yeah. You never see them in the quarterfinals, despite always getting a ticket. But they've been really good. And Takashi Inui is a player... Don't sing while I'm recording. Well, I mean, you can, like, if you want to do it on mic, but like, not when I'm actually trying to speak. Japan... Takashi Inui is a player who was great for Eibar in La Liga, and it was always really interesting.
Delaney's correct, yeah.
Don't third person yourself either. 2002 and 2010. And they're the only times they've ever got out of the group. Okay, interesting. Takashi Inui, when he was at Eibar, you know, a tiny little club in the Basque country, like a 4,000 seater stadium in the hills there, the Green Hills, and it's basically the home to like a bunch of Japanese journalists who would follow Inui around, and every time they played away at whatever stadium, the Japanese journalists would be there and they'd be, you know, tracking his progress and reporting it back home. And it was always funny to see them at this tiny little club. And then now he's signing for Real Betis, who are obviously a bigger club, kind of really on the up under Kike Setien, who's a very talented coach. And Inui is a very talented playmaker himself, but they've also got Keisuke Honda, who's a veteran. They've got Makoto Hasebe, who's another veteran. But again, these are two players that have played a lot of football in Europe. And they've got Shinji Kagawa, who is a star for Borussia Dortmund. And he did quite well at Man United. He was certainly popular at Man United.
He was popular, yeah. But he just almost wasn't a role in the team. Because really the issue there was, I suppose, United ended up getting Van Persie when maybe they hadn't fully expected. And it kind of just negated Kagawa's role a bit.
It didn't quite work out as well as it could have done. But everyone, I think, knows that he's a good player and he's fun to watch and he's, you know, very technical. But he's actually got a lightning turn of pace for a playmaker. He is quick off the mark. And it's just a good midfield. That's an interesting midfield. The problem was that Yuya Osaka, the striker, was not considered to be that good, and basically he's played quite well this tournament, I think, is the major uplift. Shinji Okazaki, we know, is a willing runner. He's not necessarily the most natural finisher of all time, but he's great to have in your team because he helps you win the ball back in good positions, and then when you've got good playmakers like they do, you're going to create chances. They've got players like Mayo Yoshida, who's obviously a Premier League veteran. You've got Atsuto Yoshida, the fullback, and Nagatomo, the fullback, who've been in top European leagues. They've actually got probably the best Japan team I think I've ever seen. When you consider previously, they've kind of had a few players playing in the big European leagues, but I don't think ever to this extent. So I think it's good for them to go through, and I think that they've been really impressive so far, and I've actually quite enjoyed watching their games, which is, to be honest, the only thing I care about at the World Cup. Senegal have been interesting. Their fans have been great. I think we all knew that they were going to be kind of thunder and lightning attack, not a team that you want to go high against, because on the counter attack they can shred you. The goals today, again, slightly for The Wagway one was decent, wasn't it? But Senegal have got a real chance of going through from the groups, which would be great for them. It would be great for African football. They're by far the best African team at the World Cup, you'd say, so far. But if Japan and Senegal were to go through, it would be Colombia who are the odd ones out. So what would your prediction be from the final games in Group H?
I think Colombia are going through.
You think Colombia go? They have quality. They have genuine quality.
I think maybe there's a bit more to them than Senegal, who can be a bit. Even today, I mean, they should have beaten Japan today. The way they tactically set up, I think Japan probably had more of the game, but it felt a bit. It felt Senegal were a bit kind of clever about it, only to kind of suffer these kind of lapses. And I think Colombia could exploit that.
I feel very sorry for the odd one out of these three teams, because I think they've all brought something good and interesting to the World Cup, and as I say, that is really the bar which I set. Let's look at this last week of fixtures, Miguel. So we're going to get two groups a day, starting obviously tomorrow with the decider in Russia's group and the decider in Spain's group. Russia and Uruguay are both through, we know that. Egypt and Saudi Arabia both out, so it's a battle to see who finishes top in Group A. Do you think that it's going to make a massive difference? Because either way, you're running into Spain or Portugal. Oh no, well, Iran as well. But for Russia and Uruguay, you'd expect them to both have trouble getting beyond the round of 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Uruguay have been much poorer than we'd expect.
True, but if Spain play Uruguay, say, they're exactly the sort of team that Spain particularly struggle against, these dogged defences, as we saw in the Iran game. I'd expect Spain to have a bit too much, but you're right.
Iran versus Portugal is not going to be easy, and all the Portuguese players were really keen to point that out when we spoke to them after the Morocco match the other day. And Carlos Queiroz knows the Portugal players well. There's obviously... it's a well-coached team. They defended incredibly well against Spain, and I think they probably deserve something from that game, despite obviously having very little of the ball. So, Spain-Portugal, Miguel, you're still expecting... I mean, you at the start of the week were telling us that you thought Iran could do Portugal in your own inimitable way. And you still believe that, or do you think Portugal will get through?
I think Portugal will get through, but I don't think it'll be a comfortable night for them.
A draw is enough, obviously, for them. So they're going to be favourites. So we've got Russia and Uruguay going through from that group, obviously, but we still fancy Spain, Portugal. Should we just whip through all the other groups quickly? France, Denmark, Australia, Peru. France are through for sure. Denmark need a point against France. Mm-hmm. So that game we're going to be at, France, Denmark. Or are you coming to that?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, France, Denmark, we're both going to be at. And
to Kaliningrad the next day.
And you're looking at France, Denmark, and you're saying, right, so both teams need a point. Denmark could top the group if they win it. Australia need France to beat Denmark, which isn't, let's be honest, it's not out of the question. And then Australia beat Peru by one goal. Yeah, so just beat them, that's fine. Goal difference-wise, it'll work. So you've got to prefer Denmark here, but equally, you do expect France would beat Denmark, and you do expect Australia would beat Peru. So in that scenario, the Australians go through.
See, the odd thing as well, actually, is notionally France could take it easy, but then if they send out a kind of a second place team and Denmark beat them, then Denmark will top the group. So it's actually, at first glance, that group looks kind of done. But it's actually not. It's very far from done. There's a fair bit of intrigue still there.
I am interested as to what France do.
Also, just on France. I mean, you never know how difficult Deschamps is going to ultimately make it for them.
Correct. I don't expect them to rest loads of players. I think there will be some, obviously, but not loads. Group D is the one that we're very interested in: Croatia, Nigeria, Iceland, Argentina. Croatia, the only team that are through from this group. They are probably going to be group winners, looking at that goal difference. It's very difficult for Nigeria to catch them. But really, it's second place that's still up for grabs, because Argentina play Nigeria, knowing that a win will put them above Nigeria. So, and they also know they have to win. Mm-hmm. So they've had to approach this game with all the the wild stuff that's been going on in the camp, including today's press conference.
It's going to be great.
All the wild stuff that's gone on. Argentina know a win could put them through. But they also know that if Iceland beat Croatia, which isn't out of the question either, then they could go through. However, you could see Argentina putting a few past Nigeria. If Argentina hit their stride, they could beat Nigeria 3-0. Mm-hmm. And Nigeria would have to attack, right? Iceland, if they beat Croatia, you can't see them doing it by much. And the goal difference between Iceland and Argentina is only one. So there is a scenario where Iceland and Argentina both win, but Argentina leapfrog both Iceland and Nigeria. If I am confusing you at home, then I can only apologise. Either way, what I'm saying is Group D is one of the most interesting scenarios. Group E, you mentioned that Brazil might not finish top of this group. Costa Rica are out for sure. Brazil play Serbia in their final game. A point takes them through. A win ensures probably that they top the group. Possibly that they top the group. Switzerland play Costa Rica. Switzerland have got to be pretty confident of going through because they know a win against the Costa Ricans.
I actually think that could be a draw, though.
And why do you think that?
Because I think Costa Rica are good defensively and Switzerland's main strength themselves is defence. Like that could actually be a bad game because of the kind of tension involved as well.
Costa Rica haven't scored a goal yet this tournament, and I feel like if Switzerland score one, then they're fine. Yeah. Switzerland are one of the teams that I was perhaps slightly harsh on. I called them boring and said they shouldn't be here. But really, they are not... They're not as boring as I thought they would be.
I wouldn't like to be facing them.
No, I think that they're not as terrible a team as you might think. Serbia still have the chance to go through, as we said, but they need to get a result against Brazil. There is a scenario where they draw with Brazil and Costa Rica beat Switzerland and Serbia go through. But that seems unlikely. Group F, Mexico aren't secure, as Critch explained earlier on. Mexico, Germany and Sweden all very much in the mix. South Korea, amazingly, if they beat Germany, could go through as well. So that's going to be a fun one, the conclusion of which is yet to be seen. England and Belgium both played two, both won two, both scored eight, both conceded two. And they both got 6 points. Who finishes top, as we discussed earlier, is going to be really interesting. And Group H, all to play for. I fancy the Japanese to go through. And I think you're right. I think Colombia could pick off Senegal in that last one, which takes us to the round of 16. At that point, all bets are off. And I think to bring it all the way back round to England, because, you know, today felt like very much like an England day. For all the good performances like this, England do have to show it in the knockout stages. That's where they haven't won a knockout game since 2006, Ecuador. Is that right?
Yeah.
If you look at the teams they have beaten in knockout games over the last, like, 30, 40 years, the only good team they've beaten was Spain in 96, basically. And that's not Spain of now, is it?
Also, that game, I mean, it's actually quite interesting given how Euro 96 is viewed. I think England were really bad that day. And it was amazing, actually, they came off with a performance as flat as that after what they did to Holland. Like, Spain were... And I'm not just speaking this as a half Spaniard. They were robbed that day. the Mancharin goal, they should have been allowed. Spain should have a penalty as well, as far as I remember. But there was two big decisions that went against Spain. Robbed.
I refuse to believe that the host nation would ever benefit from refereeing decisions. I do believe that Gareth Southgate, you know, people are kind of latching onto the fact now that he pays a lot of attention to detail. And things like, I was talking to someone who's close to a player that has used the same striking coach as Gareth Southgate has taken to Russia with England. And he uses the videos of Harry Kane striking the ball that, you know, Kane, obviously a guy he coaches. He shows that to other strikers that he works with because he's like, this is the example to follow. Because Kane has the most pure strike in terms of his follow-through doesn't come too high off the ground. I think it's below 20 centimetres or something like that. I can't remember the exact number. I think it was 20 centimetres. The arc of his leg is a perfect pendulum swing. He is so good at aiming the ball. He always finds the corners of the net. It's just a little bit of extra attention to detail is not just having a coach for strikers, but someone who focuses on the striking of the ball, which at some point is the most important thing. And you watch the penalties today, and it's like, okay, well, that is where it really manifests itself. He's a player who plays on instinct anyway. If you can coach extra good, like better technique into him, marvellous. The set piece stuff we've talked about, you know, and how they've used different ones today, where Stones previously was a like one of the four raiders they had, and then today Stones drops out the box and then gets a long run at it, which is completely different. Gareth Southgate is interested in NBA techniques and NFL techniques for set plays, like what they call screens and screen passes in NFL, and in the NBA they use screens to get players, just you just need half a yard to get a shot off so you can score. And that is what Gareth is bringing to the role, because really this 4 weeks is a tiny part of the job. The real job has happened in the last 18 months or so, and they have taken a lot of external things on board. And I think one of the other things that he realised is a World Cup campaign kind of comes with two gears. You've got when you're playing against teams worse than you, and you've got when you're playing against teams better than you. And if you're happy to acknowledge that there are teams better than you and you're willing to change your style, which I think he is, he's smart enough to do that, it's what we've talked about. He's found a system where he only needs to make one minor tweak in the centre midfield, basically rotate the three-man midfield from being a triangle with 2 points at the bottom to being 2 points at the top. The last couple of games, it was Lingard and Ali, and then Lingard and Loftus-Cheek as the 2 points at the top with Henderson in behind. If he rotates it, so it's Henderson and Dyer behind a more attacking midfielder, then that will be perfect. It'll be more like a 3-4-1-2, wouldn't it? Whereas now it's kind of a 3-3-2-2 sort of shape. So I think he's really thought about this, and that's why I think that coming up against Belgium, and eventually they're going to have to play a good team, but when they do come up against these good teams, I think Southgate has been preparing for this for a long time, in the same way that he's been preparing for Panama for a long time. It's just a different plan.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think he'd be quite well versed. Maybe this is the big challenge for England, though. Because one of the issues in previous tournaments, I suppose, England have ultimately been, it's not necessarily beaten by the first good side they've come against, but beaten by smarter, more savvier sides. And that is the real test for Southgate, I suppose, and that's where we're going to see the kind of real metal of this. But so far, the signs in that regard have been encouraging.
Do you think? Where would you peg England now? Do you think, from what you've seen so far, the quality we've seen from teams, and obviously taking into account the strength of opposition, but from what we've seen so far, do you think England are a kind of a last 18?
Yeah, definitely. I'd be surprised they don't make last 8, to be honest.
So that's an upgrade, basically, on what we thought coming into the tournament, which was a last 16-ish.
I think there was always a fair confidence, given the group directly facing England's is, or sorry, the teams that play in the last 16, is Group H, with Colombia, Senegal, and Japan, who are all good teams, but given the sides you could have come up against, it's favourable. If England were to play any of those right now, I'd probably have them kind of 51-49 favourites.
Well, England-Colombia would be a very interesting game indeed. I think Southgate's plan would work quite well against Japan or Senegal.
Yeah.
It's Colombia who have genuine quality. I think we've seen it with James today again, and Falcao, but Quintero has really stepped up, and you know, he's a player who has always had an immense amount of talent but never put it together, and probably moved to Europe too young and had a lot of trouble off the field, more like kind of family stuff and mental stuff, that he wasn't like a crazy party boy or anything. I don't want to insinuate that it was his fault, but he's back on track and he's been playing some great football basically this tournament. He's made himself undroppable. Where really he only played in the first game because at the last minute James just wasn't quite fit and he only came on for half an hour. So James isn't fully fit. I think that was obvious from today. He still isn't fully mobile. But when he's playing the passes like he played today for the Cuadrado goal, I think Colombia are going to be an interesting proposition. And unless you've got anything else to say, I guess we'll leave it there.
Just to notice Neil Henderson, who does a very good job publicising the front pages and back pages every day for the BBC. But he's had a tweet there that's going to cause a crackle with many Irish people, in which he's accused he's responding to a piece of Roy Keane's punditry by saying, from a guy who deserted his national squad, no, that is factually incorrect.
No one really cares about Ireland's like 2002 World Cup campaign, except you. But I understand that there is more reading material on that. Stuttgart to Saipan. Google that, and you can read all about Roy Keane temper tantrum, Mick McCarthy losing his mind, and pretty much everything in between. Stuff going on the website at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. It's all lined up, ready to be published. We've got Michael Cox analysing the tactics of, well, how can you say it, England's absolute smashing of Panama. Jack Pitbrook has written about Harry Kane, Gary Lineker and the Golden Boot. Johnny Liu, I haven't read his piece yet, so there's a surprise piece from Johnny Liu. I've done a quick sweep of the world's media to see how they reacted to England and what people think about England. And then we've got, you know, the usual stuff, a preview of Spain-Morocco, which is happening tomorrow afternoon, or if you're listening on Monday morning, today. So have a nice day, have a nice week, and we'll be with you again tomorrow, as we are every day. And, you know, as ever, please review, rate, subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you at the corner.